as women, we do take on a lot. You know, we think, oh, I'll just do it myself.
Yeah.
And I think this is how they get into this sort of burnout, extra stress mode.
You hit the nail on the head. We kind of think we're larger than life and indispensable and, you know, won't get done unless we do it. But again, it's a world we keep spinning and nothing will change, right? We're a mere speck, an assembly of atoms that will just go back to the same, you know, atom particles in a totally different shape when we're gone.
I love that.
And there's nothing, nothing there, right? Yeah. If we look at the Earth or the entire galaxy or, you know, all the assembly of planets, there's nothing there. It's just a speck.
Hello and welcome to the 40s Formula, your go-to place for insightful discussions on navigating your 40s and thriving in this transformative decade.
We're your hosts, Amanda and Jasmine, two women that are passionate about exploring the challenges and adventures that come with turning 40 and what lies ahead. Dr. Melina Sipaya is the Chief of Learning and Culture at the Sal Foundation. In her previous role, she was a Chief Wellbeing Officer at the National University Health System, focused on supporting and enhancing the mental, physical and emotional health of 16,000 employees. Dr. Sipaya was the Administrative Director for Clinical Education for 8 years, whilst holding an appointment of Adjunct Assistant Professor at the NUS School of Medicine. A certified facilitator of mindfulness-based stress reduction, she has worked closely with healthcare professionals and students to enhance resilience and combat burnout. Her extensive work experience spans over 36 years across 6 countries, encompassing diverse roles in food security and food science, education and healthcare. Today, we're going to be looking at a topic that affects so many women, and that topic is workplace well-being. Now, many women of our age are balancing a family, might have a demanding career, caregiver responsibilities, and could be going through the dreaded menopause. And all of this can be such a challenge, especially if you are working all day long. So what we are going to be talking about today is how can we better manage our health and well-being whilst at work? And to do that, we have got Dr. Melina Sipaya with us today on the 40s Formula. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for joining us. We're so excited to have you here with us and share your expertise. You. So Melina, let's just go straight into it. What do you think are the biggest challenges that women face in the workplace today?
I think it would be the same problems that men face with a different sort of angle to it. At different ages, perhaps in our 20s and 30s, we might be setting up a family, or even into our 40s, maturing into our work demands like managerial level or leadership level. So the stressors are slightly different, perhaps. Finding that balance is not going to be easy at any age. As you mentioned, as we grow into our latter years, we become caregivers as well. Some are less fortunate. They may be caregivers earlier on if you've got special needs children. There's no sort of blanket rule for everyone. A supportive workplace would be the answer. And that, again, for any age, any gender, that is the magic formula, I think. Being heard, being respected and valued, whatever difficulties we may be facing.
When you were talking about kind of the balance and the supportive workplace, I have a client right now who she's struggling to find time to work out, to exercise. And she's like, you know, I'm at the office from 10 a.m. Or at the office or on calls from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. And my initial gut reaction is you have to set a boundary there. Is it reasonable to be in an office or on a call for 12 hours of a day if you have small kids at home? If you, I mean, it doesn't even matter if you just have a life outside of work. How do you advise that women in these situations set boundaries?
It's really not easy. Depends on what the expectations are. Flexible work arrangements and all the things that we suddenly found were available I think we need to keep on that trend and try and work something out where people still have breaks. Yes. Just take a break and enjoy your meal or listen to a podcast, yeah. You know, wonderful things that re-energize and recharge. There is a saying, you know, sitting is the new smoking. Yeah. It's not actually that, but the sense is we spend too many hours sitting. And 12 hours in a stretch is definitely not good for us. Yeah. You know, maybe have a conversation with the boss and colleagues as to how we're going to work and be very honest and say, I need some time to exercise because I'm most productive at work when I'm well and I need to do this.
Yeah. But yeah. I think that statement in itself is somewhat revolutionary. To actually face your boss and say, I need to prioritize my wellness. I need to take a break in the day and exercise.
Right? Yeah, no, because I think that what will happen is people think, if I speak up, if I say something, that's going to hinder my career progress. And that how can someone have the courage or the means to say something like that when, you know, they might get overlooked for a promotion or some other opportunity where a man doing the job might be favored because he's not going to say, oh, I need to do this or I need to look after my kids. Do you think that we see these types of challenges as well?
Perhaps in the number of hours spent, but we're not counting beans, right? At work, we're looking at the outcomes. Mm-hmm. So maybe if we sit down to say, these are the things I need to achieve to the quality that is required of me within this time frame or this timeline, if I can do it whilst I do other things, mm-hmm. is that going to be okay? Yeah. It's still going to be 45 or 40, whatever, how many ever hours a week. But if the outcomes are more than satisfactory, then the person should be allowed to do what they need to do. And that sort of flexibility, whether it's time, the type of enthusiasm and energy, because sitting for 12 hours just drains you.
Yeah. You're not producing your best work. We have to be honest there, right?
Yeah.
At some point in that 12 hours, there's diminishing returns.
Yeah. Mm. And I think the very, very extreme would be, you know, people who drop dead at their desks from exhaustion. Yeah. Maybe Japan, Korea, I'm naming countries that I've heard of such mm-hmm. phenomena. Why do something that's really not good for you? Yeah. Right?
Did you see that Straits Times article that recently came out?
No,
that
I didn't.
Singapore, I believe, is the third, and you guys can double check me on this, the third most tired nation.
Wow. Oh, okay.
It was like a self-rated fatigue scale of some, you know, it was like a validated scale.
Mm. Okay.
But I want to say Singapore was the third most tired country, or possibly even higher. But yeah, I mean, it's like people here are reporting extreme fatigue.
Yes.
And I think overwork is one of those reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I didn't know about the fatigue report, but I've heard several times about being the most sleep deprived country.
Sort of matches.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But it's also a country where, unless it's changed in the last few months, the highest number of amputations. And you're going to ask why?
For diabetics?
Correct.
Yeah. Wow. Is that specifically diabetes related?
I think because badly managed diabetes leads to gangrene. I mean, I'm shortening the whole journey, mm-hmm. right? A healthy lifestyle includes movement, includes, you know, having time to have proper nutrition. Because if you're stuck sitting for a long time, you can't even get up and fix yourself a nutritious salad or fry an egg or something. Right.
It's going
something
to be a simple. Packet of crisps or some chocolate.
Or whatever arrives on your doorstep.
Yeah.
Or tons of Coke, right? Because it's going to get your energy levels up and keep you alert and awake. But for how long, right?
It's a snowball.
And so, you know, this just goes back to productivity at work is the same as being productive at home and being productive in your general day-to-day life. You need to not only eat well, you need to move, you need to incorporate all of these things in. And then going back to reports, there was another report by Deloitte who did a Women at Work report last year. And that report actually highlighted that stress levels are going up and there are higher rates of burnout.
This report was worldwide?
Yes. It was like a worldwide women at work report that they interviewed women across different sectors, different countries. And it's interesting because you would have expected that some of the things that happened over COVID, where you do get more sort of flexible working arrangements, they seem to be sort of fizzling out now. Do you think that's kind of the case? And what can people do to try to help reduce this stress and anxiety that they've got around working?
Again, it boils down to the culture at work, right? Yeah. Beyond looking at policies, HR policies of, you know, how many hours we need to work, and we need to look at engagement. What drives people? What satisfaction, fulfillment? They're very big words, but, you know, happiness is a concept that is elusive perhaps, but a lot of it boils down to meaning and purpose, right?
Yeah.
Is it meaningful for me to be a robot and do these hours just for the sake of it? Is it meaningful for me to feel awful when I can't attend my children's important moments, whether at school, at home, or when they're sick, to just say, I'm so sorry, you know, you're going to get the care without mummy or without daddy because I've got other priorities. Mm-hmm. So being able to prioritize and then having a chat about it in the workplace, and again, include colleagues, because we're not alone. Yeah. And the single voice might not be heard, but as a collective, that may be more effective, I think.
I think that's a great tip.
Yeah.
Because exactly what you mentioned, you know, I do think that, you know, if it's a single voice and a single female voice, it can sometimes be dismissed as, oh, it's just her problem.
Yeah.
But if you get a mixed group, you know, mixed genders, mixed backgrounds, ages, you know, to say, no, we all need to prioritize this way, I think that is so much more powerful.
I've had colleagues, male colleagues, who've said, you know, I'm either divorced or the only child, I'm not married, looking after my parents, and I need time off to take them for their medical visits, appointments, and I need to do this and do that. Yeah. And so it cuts across different genders as well, yeah. I think.
Amanda, you know we love the Meat Club, but do you know what's even better than their premium ethically sourced meats?
What's that?
Getting $250 worth of your shopping for free. And that's exactly what we're going to be doing in our Season 5 giveaway.
All you have to do is show us the delicious meals that you make using the Meat Club products. Tag at the 40s formula and at the Meat Club SG on Instagram or TikTok, and you stand a chance to win $250 worth of the Meat Club goodies.
It can be a photo, a reel, and don't worry if your account's private. Just drop us a DM and we'll count your entry.
We'll be picking one lucky winner at the end of the season. So make sure to submit all those delicious meals before June 5th.
It's time to jump in the kitchen and get cooking, and we cannot wait to see what you make. For women who are in sort of managerial positions, or even just managers who might be male, what can they do to sort of help their colleagues or their employees to better manage stuff? Is there something that you can suggest that they can help to sort of implement and make a more productive or easier, better work culture?
In a managerial role, we're sort of sandwiched between the leadership level and then people that work with us, right?
You kind of get this shit from both ends.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
I think so. One of the things would be, you know, very good listening skills. Mm-hmm. We tend to speak more than we listen. Not all, but generally. But when we listen really carefully, what is needed? What is the feedback I'm getting? And act on it. And both ways, we might be cascading things down from the top. You know, decisions are made and things have to run and this way and that. But from the ground up as well, the listening to what people not can or can't do, but how they be their best selves when they show up, right? And that's not too much to ask. It's not like they're not going to do it, but we can do it much better if we had this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. Within reason, not unreasonable requests or demands, right?
Yeah.
So stress is a natural response in from, you know, even animals as well. It's a survival thing. And we need a certain amount of stress, right? Butt kicked just so that we get there. Yes. And it builds our resilience because we were totally unstressed. There would be no response, you know?
Just be lying there, not moving.
Yeah. Fight, flight, freeze, right?
Right?
So stress, prolonged stress, our adrenaline, cortisol levels are extremely high in the bloodstream, and that's not good for us. So maybe saying that stress for a little while is good, but after that, support, as in colleagues, could you take over this? I'm just going to have a break. When I was working in the hospitals for many, many years, we used to run a program. And in the emergency department, for example, it's one way. The doors open, they keep coming in, they keep coming in, right? Everything from coughing calls to serious car accidents, right? So there's trauma. And they're all having to do triage, right? What's very, very urgent and important to do now and serious and what's less. We sort of helped the staff, whether they were doctors and nurses, on a very, your shift becomes very long, right? Because it's very intense.
Yeah.
To just say, I need 5 minutes, I'm going to step out and have a breather. Just cover me. The world's not going to collapse because I'm out. But that communication to say, I need this.
Yes. My husband was that doctor. So he was in ED for the entire, you know, before we started our clinic, that's what he did. And you're absolutely right. Just to say, I just need to go outside, take a deep breath, potentially close my eyes, you know, because obviously it's very visually stimulating as well to working in the ED, right? You see things are presented to you. Let's put it that way. You don't get a choice. And, you know, to be empowered to say that is actually difficult, even for doctors. You'd think, oh, doctors, they can do whatever they want. That's not true.
No.
There's a very specific ranking and kind of way of interacting in that world as well, which you're
it's
very familiar with.
It's a pecking order.
Yeah,
for sure.
That's a great way to say it, the pecking order. And so, you know, the underlings might not feel comfortable saying, hey, I just need 5 minutes, you know? And I think that that advice is good for doctor in the emergency room, equally to parent of three young children, for example. Like you have to be able to say even to your children, like, you know, mommy has been overstimulated for this morning. I need a moment to look at a book or, you know, take a breather and then, you know, let's play together again.
Correct.
I think that those boundaries are equal depending, no matter what the situation.
And if you can't step out, right, because it's COVID and we're all gowned up, for example,
literally,
you know, close your eyes and people hate the word meditation, like, what's that stuff again? Have a mindful moment.
Yeah.
As you said, breathe, right? And just take stock. The levels of all those hormones that are overstimulating you for too long are just going to drop for a while.
Yeah.
And that is biologically proven, right?
Yeah.
The parasympathetic nervous system kicks in and you're going to just going to be a little bit more relaxed. It's not the right word, but efficient rather than being on overdrive and then, you know, just burning out.
Yeah. And I love what you said about how, like, even in the emergency department, it's like, you know, you can take 5 minutes, you know, nothing's going to, the world's not going to end. Where it's funny because I think people outside of that world would be like, that's an actual life or death situation.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
If those people can take a break, I surely can take a break.
Oh yeah. On the flip side, I was speaking to a client yesterday who's going through a lot of work. She's saying it's a very busy period and she is struggling to offload and I guess delegate to her employees because one, she's worried that they can't do it as well as her. And two, she's also thinking that if I tell someone to do this, I'm just going to get, rah, 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 that's not my job. So what can women who are in that situation, maybe not even women, just people in that situation do? Because I do feel like as women, we do take on a lot. You know, we think, oh, I'll just do it myself.
Yeah.
And I think this is how they get into this sort of burnout, extra stress mode.
You hit the nail on the head. We kind of think we're larger than life and indispensable and, you know, won't get done unless we do it. But again, the world we keep spinning and nothing will change, right? We're a mere speck, assembly of atoms that will just go back to the same, you know, atom particles yeah. in a totally different shape when we're gone, and there's nothing
true story. Yeah.
Nothing there, right? Yeah. If we look at the Earth or the entire galaxy, or you know, all the assembly of planets, there's nothing there. It's just a speck.
Mm.
And if we sort of zoom out into the intense moments that we're in, and just are able to say it's fine, it's going to be all right. It's as we do that, or when we take a break, I think the other part about communicating is it's always a two-way thing, and it needs to be cultural. That means we say it too. If any of you needs, you're having a meltdown, and you know, just play with words, right? Mm-hmm. It might be not a meltdown, but you just, any of you need a break, come to me, mm-hmm. I'll cover you, go do your thing, right?
That's so
because there are times when we need it,
yeah,
but if we keep saying it, yes. People know you've got their backs,
yes,
right? Your kid's not well, you need to do this, just go,
yeah.
Right? Next Saturday, oh, you've got a shift, I'm not doing anything, can I help? But in return, obviously, you know, it's reciprocal,
yeah.
Right? And that's the sort of culture. It's a community of people trying to get through the day at work, at home, in the neighborhood, and in schools, for parents, for teachers. You know, teachers are terribly stressed,
yeah.
Right? And I can imagine, Amanda, in the States where... gun control. I know, yeah. We're not going to get into that, yeah, but yeah. You know, walking into but school
yeah.
is
yeah,
like
talk about that chronic
very,
low-grade
very,
stress.
Yeah,
you know,
it's very
every
different
time you
from
approach
Singapore,
your workplace,
right?
Yeah, you can't help but think about that.
Yeah, so you know, keep saying it,
yeah.
Right? And display that behavior.
Yeah,
I think that's otherwise also important. It would be very hypocritical.
Yes.
Like what?
I loved your analogy of, you know, being a tiny speck and sort of zooming out. It reminded me, I don't know if you've seen this movie, it's going to show how old I am now, but obviously everyone knows I'm in my 40s. Men in Black.
Oh,
the first one, you know, when it was the galaxy was in Orion's belt
yeah.
and, you know, it was like Orion's belt, not in space, but, yeah. You know, on the cat's neck. Anyway, yeah. I digress. Women do tend to suffer from burnout a lot more. The men, and I guess it is part of this responsibility that they tend to take on themselves. How can you recognize within yourself whether you are en route to burning out?
Signs of burnout, either in the workplace or at home, are disengagement, right? Mm. So the classic burnout scale has three categories. One is depersonalization, the other is emotional exhaustion, and the third is personal accomplishment. So if you feel you're not accomplishing things, you're low on that, but you're high on emotional exhaustion and depersonalization, then you're burnt out. Okay. Yeah. That disengagement comes from not being able to cope. There's a short circuit and that's it. I'm just, you know, a zombie now. Mm. But to snap out of it isn't easy. It can look like depression. It can look like a form of anxiety as well. Where you just, you know, almost catatonic and not responding. All the things that we do not have conversations about because it's highly stigmatized, mm-hmm. Mental health, seeing a therapist, having access with if you've consulted a doctor, to drugs, right? Mm-hmm. It might be a chemical imbalance, mm-hmm. as well, that something's going on. But, you know, different types of therapies, drugs, talk therapy, having a good rest, having good support around you. In the workplace, we had to design that where people take time off work and then reintegrate the workplace. So there are policies for that. We also had to get around the soft skills, the unseen. If person X goes off, then Z and Y take on their work.
Mm-hmm.
When they come back, there's a lot of resentment.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Right? So we have to manage that as well. And coming back doesn't mean they take on 100%. Sometimes the HR policies can say you come back at 50, bump it up to 70. If you feel that's not working, go back to 50 or less. But it's conversations that need to be had, and the person has to feel supported and safe. But with enough, understanding and judgment, I think we can make a call. You know, otherwise the person either leaves or just is very, very sick.
And I mean, it's one of those things, you know, you're just mentioning like, okay, so let's say this very, very stressed person, you know, person X needs to take leave. And then, you know, Z and Y are taking over their responsibilities and then they come back. Is there a world where before X gets so stressed that they have to leave, that X, Y, and Z all have a more flexible working arrangement where all three of them get a break?
Yes.
You know, meaning like where everyone catches a break before one person burns out and then turns the other two into overdrive.
Yes.
You know, how do you design those workplaces?
Those preventative workplaces would be the culture, right? What do I need to deliver? How am I going to get there? How do I do it? With whom am I going to do it? And have those conversations. I will need twice a week to be able to get to the gym or twice a week to go for my, you know, calligraphy or class or go for a walk, right?
Yeah.
And every 6 weeks, I'm going to have, you know, a day off or 2 days off plus the weekend. It's something we need to design together, and that forms a certain workplace culture. If having done that, productivity is low, people are not delivering, then we'll have to rethink and redesign what we initially thought would work, right? So it's a work in progress. It's going to be several iterations to get there. And it will continue changing, right? Well, whilst people's life's courses change, they may be facing other issues. If they find out that they've got an illness, if they find out that a loved one has an illness, or even grieving and loss, right? Those are times where people are just going to be not themselves. And you know, we roll with the punches. We'll have several conversations as we need to, I guess.
My brother's a great example of this. He very suddenly, very tragically lost his wife last year.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you. And his workplace was incredible. They could be the model for what a supportive environment looks like, where, you know, he obviously delivered that news as suddenly as it occurred. And they said, don't worry. Like you from this day until the foreseeable future, you take as much time as you need, as much leave as you need. Don't check in. Don't wonder. Don't worry. It will be taken care of. And when you're ready to come back, because for my brother, his job's a great part of his identity. He wanted to come back, right? So they said, when you're ready to come back, you come right back in. Your job is here. Your team is here.
Wow.
And that's exactly how it went, by the way. He returned to work about 3 or 4 weeks after that tragedy occurred. And he's thriving at work. And that is a very positive place for him to be now. And it's helping him get through. So those places do exist. This is America, by the way, Arizona.
Wow, that's very supportive.
It was amazing.
And I think as you described it, did he ever say how he felt when people said that to him?
I know how he felt because it just so happened that we were in the car together when his boss initially had called and said, you know, hey, I'm checking in. What do you need? And, you know, my brother was almost like, I don't know what I need at this point. And he said, well, then don't worry about it. We got it under control. I mean, I could tell how incredible that felt for him. You know, it was almost an unspoken understanding that then, like I said, that came to fruition. He felt supported, knowing that his job was there, his team was there, there's nothing in peril. And then he felt understood that how long it might take, he doesn't know. Who knows how long grief takes, you know? So I think it was a really powerful example of what, and this is, by the way, the corporate of corporate jobs. This is not some like artist or, you know, not say anything against the art world, but, you know, this is not something that's like a flexible working arrangement type of job. This is a high travel demand, highly corporate job. And they were able to make that space for him.
And when he came back, I think feeling valued.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very valued, yeah.
You're not just a cog in the system, right? Mm-hmm. You're a human being. Yeah. Life happens.
Yeah.
Tragedy happens. And you come back and people are still there and everyone, you know, loves you. And that's lovely, isn't it?
And it's not just lip service, right?
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, on the flip side of that, I've had clientele, so I'm a coach, and I've had clientele that have, for example, gone on maternity leave and been told, your job will be here, no problem, we got it, and then been let go at the end of their maternity leave before they come back to work. So that's, you know, the opposite side of that story is like the lip service that we're here for you, everything will be waiting for you when you come back, and then the other shoe drops.
So that, I guess, brings in the whole sort of compassion side of things. And what could you say workplaces need to do to incorporate more compassion into a working environment?
The definition of compassion is a little bit more complex than empathy. Empathy is perspective taking, walking in somebody else's shoes, right? Understanding what's going on. Compassion is a little notch up where you actually take action to relieve the pain or suffering or whatever that person's going through. So it's more that there's a result. Empathy is understanding, holding space, and that's it. You don't actually need to do anything. That's very valuable too. It's not any lesser than compassion. So a compassionate workplace would be actions tied to events that are not positive, right? We need to help someone in a certain situation, or we need to help each other. Again, with social isolation during COVID and workplaces that suddenly became bereft of human beings, contact through virtual interactions most of the time. So people who were compassionate would check in on one another. I think people received little presents and surprises when they were, you know, working from home. Birthdays were remembered, although they couldn't be together. Those sort of things. And people who lost loved ones, who couldn't actually either go for the funerals or fly across the world in time because nobody was flying or doing anything like that. Compassionate acts come in different ways, different sizes, holding space, just listening, understanding, feeling what the other person feels, being there is extremely important. Yeah. At the same time, there are certain jobs that require a lot of compassion, obviously in healthcare, but, you know, pastors, priests, any imams, rabbis, people who are religious heads as well, and in the community, teachers too, lawyers, although people may laugh and say,
was my first thought, but okay.
Policemen, firemen, they're all part of what we call the helping profession, right? Because we deal with people and we have to fix things, right? Or at least participate in helping, doing something. And they can suffer from something called compassion fatigue. Mm-hmm. It's a form of burnout. But if you practice compassion with meaning and purpose, it would, research shows, recharge you, because that is what you do. That is your being and your work. And if that is the way it is practiced, we shouldn't suffer from burnout. Mm-hmm. However, if we do, nursing professionals, if they're in a pediatric oncology service and all they see is children without hair, very weak, not making it, you know, through the months, they can ask to be rotated out and go to another service or different department and then come back in later, or not at all. Or some people say, this is what I love. I want to be in ICU. I want to be here. You know, this is me. This is part of my identity and who I am. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. So it depends on, you know, how this needs to be managed from one individual to another. But again, that skill of listening, you know, receiving feedback, what do I need to do in any situation that calls for it? So I guess that's what a compassionate workplace would be like.
Well, and it's interesting when you were talking about that, you know, some folks might need to be rotated out of that particular, you know, department, then some folks need to be in it, right? Similar to what you said about some folks need time off to exercise and some folks need time off to do their calligraphy class. It's like, it doesn't need to look the exact same for every single individual. And I think in building this compassionate workplace that you're talking about, it has to be individualized. It can't just be like, well, you know, everyone gets time off for exercise, but you have to prove that you're exercising and it can only be for 30 minutes. You know, it's like, well, that's not the thing that recharges me. I hope it is for everyone listening. But, you know, it's like, I think that level of personalization and understanding of different approaches is just as key.
I agree with you, Amanda. And this whole concept of resilience, right, is a very woolly subject. Mm. It's different things to different people.
Mm, you're right.
Right? Some people say, I tune out, enjoy, binge watch on Netflix, and I feel amazing after that because I've, you know.
You're absolutely right.
Some people say it's a whole, you know, glass of wine and some chocolate. Some people go run half a marathon and they feel great. So what works for different people is the response, right? That your resilience is there. But you have to, it has to be consistent, built upon. And our baseline for resilience is different as well, right? There are people who are more resilient than others. People who practice sports, strangely enough, competitive sports, build their resilience mentally because physical resilience requires that of us. We need to push ourselves.
Can you say that one more time directly? No, I'm just teasing Melina, but absolutely, you're right.
It is a fact.
And we have research now that shows that women in leadership positions, C-level positions, are, I think 94% of them played sports as kids. There's a reason for that. That's not an accidental coincidence.
Yes. Yeah. People listening and are not sporty, but other things, if you're a high-level musician, right, you play Tchaikovsky's Piano Concerto, and everyone, you're on stage, everyone's listening, not one false note, right? And you can't suddenly forget. It is high stress. So high performance, it can be in sports, it can be in the arts world, right? Ballet dancers.
Podcasting.
High stakes podcasting. Like
exactly, because, you know, one take and that's it, right? But the striving for perfection is not always that wonderful for us. We do the best we can every day. We show up. And if it's not our best, that's okay too. You don't have to beat yourself up. Be kind to yourselves, right? So in that high performance space, yes, we'd love to be fantastic, wonderful, you know, gold award or medal or whatever it is. There'll come a time when we're not, because, you know, performance is variable. Day to day, year to year, you know, if we talk about the female body, we're having estrogen for a long time and then suddenly it tapers off, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to be different, but it's not good or bad. It just is, right? And we're going to be performant in different ways.
Obviously, with the tapering off of estrogen, comes a cascade of other symptoms that could mean brain fog, just fatigue, you're not sleeping very well, which might then impact your time at work. Do you have any advice for women going through this like crazy period? Because some women feel they're not, obviously they don't feel like themselves, and and they then start to question, can I do this? Am I capable of doing what I've been doing for the last 20, 30 years? Maybe not 30, but you know, maybe 30. Is there any advice for women going through that? That, you know what, you can get through, you will get through.
Any form of change is hard, right? Especially if it's a change in a worsening of something, right? The wonderful thing and the not so wonderful thing is change is constant. So it will never be not wonderful forever, and it's not going to be ecstatically wonderful forever and ever. So except coming to the stage of acceptance, there will be other emotions in between.
Rage.
Sadness.
Rage. I fall into the anger category more than I'd like.
Yes. And helplessness, right? It's just too much for me to handle, right? Loss of confidence. We see that in children as well, right? When they have to sit for exams, when they go, they're always benchmarked against something quite ridiculous because they're them, they're not anyone else, right? But and we go through life with these benchmarks and who we need to be, where we need to be, and you know, how much we need to earn, what grade level, salary level at work, and that's part of life. And so I think being able to express our emotions when we feel those changes and slowly getting to the stage where we accept those changes. Acceptance does not mean giving up. This is what it is. This is how I'm going to get through this. But at some point, it's going to change again, right? And acceptance is making peace as well.
You said it basically, but isn't there the saying that the only constant is change?
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Thank you so much for today. I feel like you've given us so much insight into how women, people can manage wellness at work. It feels like a lot of it does come down to putting in boundaries, prioritizing yourself, and just taking a moment to breathe and being grounded with what you need to do and what you want to do. But before we finish, we do have one final question, and that is, what is your 40s formula? What would you say to women who are in their 40s on how they can best thrive either at work or in their personal lives during this decade?
Do what makes you happy. Not everything is going to be possible. That find something that you hang on to that is meaningful, purposeful, and makes you happy. Forget being perfect. We strive and we try and we outdo ourselves to be an image of something we've received, right? Even from very young fairy tales, princesses and queens and all sorts of marvelous creatures that we are told or stories relate to us, but being who we are, coming into that age where we can be ourselves is not easy. I undertook my PhD at 46 when my children had grown up. I have three and the two elder ones had left home. I had a whole lot of degrees and I did not need any more. I definitely was very privileged to have had education. Some countries where women do not have access to education, cannot drive cars, cannot do what they like with their bodies, dress the way they like. And I felt that this is something I want to do. And everybody said, you're mad because your brain has turned to putty. You've had three children and you're going to have to study and actually do research whilst working full time. So it took me several years to complete because you're just going to be slower at gathering data and, you know, getting it out there. And in the meantime, I think my father got very ill and his cancer. So, you know, all that stuff was going on. But at the end of it, was it because it was finished that I was happy? It was no, because all the warts, all the difficult parts were part of what I needed to go through to be a little bit more resilient. And today, in my sixth decade at 60, I don't really care what people think. I care if I hurt them. I care if they're not feeling well due to something in our interaction that has triggered unhappiness or ill feeling or hurt, but not as to who I am. And that's pretty, I think, empowering. So it needn't be perfect. I'm sure you noticed, and I could see in Amanda's eyes, there was this pinging sound, and it's actually my Apple Watch. I forgot to take it off, much as I took the phone away. And I thought, shoot, but you know what? It's not perfect. But has it entirely ruined this podcast? I don't think so. And life will go on. Right?
Exactly that, yeah. You're
absolutely right.
You can whip me outside when we get out of the studio.
We are recent Garmin converts, but we were Apple Watch users forever. So I knew the sound. I was like, I know that sound.
And, you know, what you're saying is, do what makes you happy. And then I guess strive for progress, not perfection. Those are sort of key things that anyone, everyone, man, woman, 40s, 50s, 60s, those are things that everybody should be hoping for. And wow, well done on getting your PhD in your mid 40s with three kids.
Incredible. And
your dad being sick. It's just such an amazing achievement that you can show people that it doesn't matter where you are in your life. If you want something, you can do it.
I think there are women and men who climb mountains and do more difficult things, go to space and are not sure if they're going to re-enter the atmosphere.
Yeah.
I think my achievements are very, very minimal compared to all of that. And, you know, supportive environments, they, you know, we love you for who you are, not who you can become or anything else, but we'll support you if you want to become something else.
Yeah,
right. So that's the message I think that is vital to to be heard and, you know, communicated.
And also, I think you did want to say that you don't give a shit anymore.
And you can say that on this podcast.
Give a toss.
Yeah. Give a toss. Thank you so much, Dr. Melina. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you both. Me too. I'll be listening to this just to hear myself and my imperfections.
Not at all.
Thank you. Thank you.
Guys, you know we love coffee. And if you want to show us some love, you know you can always get us one.
Just visit buymeacoffee.com/the40s formula.
Cheers.
Before we go, please remember to hit subscribe and take a moment to support the 40s formula by leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform.
Your reviews will help us to reach more people and allow us to continue to bring valuable content. It should only take a moment, and it's a free way for you to support the show.
You can also stay updated with the 40s formula by following us on Instagram at the 40s formula, all one word. We share behind-the-scenes insights, episode updates, and much more, so please be sure to hit that follow button.
We appreciate your time and support. Thank you for being part of this community, and we'll be back next week for more empowering conversations with inspiring guests.
Bye. Bye.
Glasses look smudgy.
Not at all.
No, not from, crystal clear.
Not from this angle.
All right. Do they feel smudgy?
I don't know.
My eyesight's not the one to be trusted, but at least, you know, from this close, it doesn't look good.
Thank you. We become obsessional.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, of course. And when you know it's being recorded.
Yeah.